It's not every day that we have someone as special with us like Rabbi Glasser. For those who don't realize, Rabbi Glasser is a product very much of this very Beis Medrash. I overlapped with Rabbi Glasser. He sat right there, right behind Rabbi Schnall for many years. Is that right? Right there. He never stopped learning. He's become a great Tam Tam. He's been the spiritual leader of Young Israel of Passaic for many years. And he's also earned international fame in NCSY. He's held many positions, too many for me to remember. But at one point, he was also an international director of something, of education, I believe. Very, very much respected in that world. He really built the JSU in around the world and in Jersey, and has done great stuff. I've heard him many times. He's a fantastic speaker, a great person. And now, YU has been lucky enough to chop him and to bring him on board. He's now running the CJF, the assistant director to the CJF, assistant dean to the CJF. And he's someone who's, Mirtz Hashem, going to be very much a part of what goes on in yeshiva with the guys, with the bachrim. Someone who I hope that you'll make a kasher with. So much to learn from him, so much to gain from him and his personality and his Torah. So it's really a zchus for BMP and for us, whoever's here, to have him with us. B'chavod Rav, Rabbi Glasser.
Thank you, Rabbi Willig. I think the only thing true in that introduction is that I did sit over there. Other than that, a lot of creativity. It is a great privilege. It is amazing to be here. I've heard so much about the phenomenal environment and Rabbeim, many of whom are sitting in this room are role models of mine, Rabbeim of mine, and it's really incredible to be here today. I want to talk to you this morning, this afternoon, about the experience of Pesach. The experience of Pesach that is unique to every single family. Everyone has their own traditions, everyone has their own dynamics, everyone has their own memories, and everyone has their own sort of constellation of personalities who show up to the Pesach Seder. I grew up personally having every Pesach Seder of my life until I became the rabbi of a shul at a hotel. I don't know if any of you have ever been to a hotel for Pesach. It's a very liberating experience. You really feel the Shibud Mitzrayim. They close the tea room sometimes. Sometimes they run out of filet mignon, and you're stuck with just regular steak. And there is a sense of oppression. There could be a sense of consternation, of challenge. Sometimes the grill is not close enough to the pool. It's a little bit further away. Sometimes you have a buffet with not every animal you'd see in a petting zoo, but only some of them. It's a phenomenal experience. It's a challenging environment. But it's also inspirational, and it's also a chance to really feel the sense of geula, the sense of redemption that the Jewish people endure. Pesach begins for all of us, though, in Mitzrayim. And the Jewish people as a nation had spent hundreds of years immersed in the world of servitude and slavery. Klal Yisrael had endured so many moments of difficulty and challenge, physical difficulty, spiritual difficulty. The commentaries tell us about the enormous challenges that faced Am Yisrael in terms of preserving their sense of Jewish identity. Today we live in America with absolute freedom, and today we have challenges of preserving Jewish identity. As Rabbi Willig mentioned, we used to run clubs in public schools for Jewish teens. So you can't walk into a public school and put a sign up on the door that says, "All Jews meet in room 212. You'll get arrested. So how do you get Jewish kids who've never heard of Torah, never heard of Yiddishkeit, and never heard of anything related to Judaism to come and coalesce and learn about their Jewish identity? So it's very simple. It doesn't matter how unaffiliated you are. It doesn't matter how distant you are from Sinai and from Kabbalah Satorah. When someone shows up with free food, they awaken the pintle of yid, that spiritual kernel of aspiration to connect to your people. And I myself would walk down the hallways with free pizza. And all of the Oriental kids would look and say, oh, that's interesting. And all the African-American kids would say, oh, that's fascinating. And all of the Jewish kids would come from the hallways and the classrooms and follow this pizza to Maimon Har Sinai. And we know that all great Jewish traditions begin with the meal, begin with the sense of converging and coalescing around an eating experience. And so the Chag of Pesach, of course, is centered around our Seder. But the Jewish people in Mitzrayim who were struggling to hold on for their identity, who were struggling to hold on for their dignity, for their sense of self, Klal Yisrael is literally descending further and further into the abyss of assimilation and tumah. Until a leader arises, Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu comes to Klal Yisrael. And he gives the Jewish people a message. And the message is, V'hotseisi eschem, I'm going to take you out of this oppression. V'yitzalti eschem, I'm going to say you, V'ga'alti, V'lakachti, V'hevesi, says Moshe Rabbeinu to Am Yisrael. We're going to leave. This is not our future. This is not where we're going to evolve as a nation any further. This is the crucible within which we have been formed, but we are going to ultimately walk out of Mitzrayim. And I, representing the Ribbono Shel Olam, I have been empowered by God Himself to bring a message to you and to the leaders of Mitzrayim that the Jewish people are going to ultimately ascend from Egypt and find their way to Kabbalah Satorah in Eretz Yisrael. And we would expect a leader of the stature of Moshe Rabbeinu, someone who had that sense of presence, someone who had that sense of care and concern and love for his fellow Jew, someone who grew up in the aristocracy of Egypt, when he comes with a message of salvation, we would expect this to inspire and arouse the masses. That people would look at this individual standing in the town square and say, we're with you. We're following you. Like a rally for Soviet Jewry. Standing up there to the roar of the crowds and saying, let my people go. We're expecting Am Yisrael to follow this leader right out of Mitzrayim. But the Torah tells us that this is not the reaction of the Jewish people. Writes the Torah, Vayidaber Keino b'nei Yisrael, Vayidaber Moshe Keino b'nei Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu gives this message, V'lo shamu el Moshe. And the people could not even hear what Moshe was saying, V'lo shamu el Moshe. Mikotze ruach u'me'avoda kasha. They couldn't hear what he was saying because they were so subsumed in the culture and in the experience of the servitude, of the slavery. Because their days have been entirely commandeered by the stresses and oppression and brutality of the Mitzrim. V'lo shamu el Moshe, they couldn't even hear a message of leadership, a message of redemption, a message of aspiration. What does it mean, v'lo shamu Moshe? We know avoda kasha, from the hard work. Asks all the Mefarshim, what is the kotzer ruach? V'lo shamu Moshe mikotzer ruach. Mikotzer, it was cut off, ruach, their spirit. What is the cut off spirit? What was it about the mentality of the enslaved Egyptian Jew that they could not develop the capacity to hear the message of redemption? What was this kotzer ruach? So Rashi and the Ramban explain that the kotzer ruach refers not just to the substance of the avodah kasha, but the impact of the avodah kasha. They were wounded. They were exhausted. Sometimes even liberation seems overwhelming. The story is told that in 1948, when the State of Israel was formed and they faced an immediate invasion of the Arab armies, and eventually a tiny little country with so few resources managed to develop the capacity to fight off their oppressors, their invaders, and establish the State of Israel. So Moshe Dayan, the general Moshe Dayan at the time, was tasked with establishing the final negotiations with the Jordanians with regards to what would be the final borders of the land of Israel. And in Moshe Dayan's autobiography, he describes that in the final moments of these negotiations, before all the ceasefires were imposed, and the facts on the ground would determine what the state of Israel would look like. He had managed to negotiate with the Jordanians that the Jewish people would be allowed to return to the Jewish quarter of the Old City. That the Old City of Jerusalem, that the Kotel HaMaravi, that the Rov HaYehudi, we would be able, this would be part and parcel of Medinat Yisrael. But of course, when push came to shove, the Jordanians backed down. And Moshe Dayan goes to Ben-Gurion and he says to him, we negotiated it, it's ours, let's go, let's fight, let's liberate, let's grab Jerusalem. We're ceding the most central part of Eretz Yisrael. How could we have a country of Israel without Jerusalem? And Ben-Gurion looks at him, Lo shamu el Moshe, mikot zeruach, u'me'abod ha'kash, says, Moshe, we're tired, it's enough. We have people coming in from all over the world who've been decimated by the Holocaust. We have an economy to build. We have a country to construct. Let it go. Bekotzer ruach. Sometimes even liberation, even the notion of being able to move forward is so difficult because we're just tired. We're just exhausted of the oppression and of the challenge. But the Meshech Chochmah provides a different insight and alternative approach that is just a phenomenal perspective. Writes the Meshech Chochmah the following. That it wasn't so much the challenge of the oppression itself, of the exhaustion of the servitude, of the evil and barbaric ways in which the Egyptians would deal with the Jewish people. But rather, writes the Meshech Chochmah, the oppression of the Jewish people, their servitude, their slavery, got them to a psychological state where all they could think about was the notion of getting out. That they wanted. So Moshe Rabbeinu, if your message is one of release, if your message is one of emancipation, if you are going to end the torture and the challenge and the difficulty, the oppression, if you're going to cease that part of our lives, great, we're in. Mikotzer ruach refers to something else entirely. Writes the Meshech Chochmah, V'lo lishmoa behavtochos asidos uvahatzlochos niflos. What the Jewish people could not perceive was the notion that there could be a reality different than the one within which they had defined themselves. They could not see themselves as something more than they were. You want to talk about Hotzeisi? Great. Ga'alti? You want to make us into a nation? Us? The downtrodden people on the receiving end of all of these blows? We're going to be the princes of the world? We're going to be the Mamleches Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh? You want to bring us to a Sinai? You want us to envision that we're not only going to be free, or free in Mitzrayim, and we're not only going to leave Mitzrayim, but we're going to establish a nation of our own, with its own infrastructure, with its own spirituality, with its own mechanism of leadership, with a king, with a prophet. You're telling me that there is an entire world of independence, an entire world of growth, of leadership that we could reach? I don't see it. Mikotzer ruach. The Jewish people had begun to define themselves based upon their challenges. And this ultimately is what Yetzias Mitzrayim was about, and that is why the entire process of Yetzias Mitzrayim echoes throughout Jewish history. Golus, Shibud, is something that would not be a stranger to the narrative of the Jewish people. There would be more Golus Mitzrayim. It would be a different country, it would be a different leader, it would be with different tactics, but it would happen all over again. And once again, the Jewish people would be faced with the Avodah Kasha, and once again, the Jewish people would be faced with the Kotzer Ruach, with beginning to internalize this identity of exile, that we do not have the capacity to break through of the ways in which our challenges define ourselves. And so much of the Seder is about an internal transformation within ourselves to begin to see ourselves differently, to begin to view ourselves differently, through the story, through the narrative of the Jewish people, but each one of us, Chayav Adam Lirosis Atzmo, this is personal. This is a moment that everyone has to grab for themselves. Everyone has to eat their own matzah. Everyone has to be part of telling the story. It doesn't matter what background you're from. It doesn't matter what your level of motivation, your level of knowledge. It doesn't matter what disposition you come from. Everyone is part of this. Because it is a personal transformation from the disposition of being an Eved, of being enslaved and defined by one's challenges, to being a Ben Choren, to being someone who is defined by their aspirations, someone whose entire life and personality and drive and motivation is not determined based on how hard things are, but is determined based on where they want to go. And this is the story of every one of our lives. We're fortunate to live. We don't live in the worst gullus in the world, although Washington Heights has got its perks. We don't live in the worst gullus of the world, but we live in an era where there are shibudim. We're enslaved. We have challenges. We have all sorts of difficulties. They're personal. They're familial. They're academic. They're spiritual. And there's a kotzer ruach that sets in. Yeah, there's an avodah kasha that has to do with scheduling and time management, but there's a kotzer ruach. There's an exhaustion. There's a sense of fatigue. How much more can I push myself? You want me to balance learning and academics and dating and family and spiritual growth and career planning, and it's a kotzer ruach. It's exhausting. Part of the magic of Pesach is to reclaim the notion of aspiration, to reclaim the notion that we can be greater than we are, that we are not defined by our challenges, we are defined by our dreams and by our goals. You know, Pesach, Dalet Kosos, is one of the few mitzvos that we require someone, even if they are in the halachic category of ani, they're as poor as anything, they have to literally sell the shirt off their back in order to ultimately fulfill the mitzvah of Dalet Kosos. You know why? Because there's no such thing as an ani on Pesach. Because no one gets to sit at the Seder table and look at themselves as poor. Because the reality of your economic situation does not define ultimately who you are. You could be the biggest ani in the world. At the end of the day, on Pesach night, you're an Ashir, you're a Ben Choren. You're a free, rich person. You look around the table and you see family and you see community and you see opportunity and you see dreams and aspirations and you reach higher than that reality. Chayiv Adam Liros es Atzmo Ki'ilu Hu Yotzam in Mitzrayim. You know what that means? It doesn't mean you close your eyes and you build an image of what it would be like to be in Egypt and I could sort of like place my avatar in this experience of moving out. It means I don't define myself as a Shibud Mitzrayim. It means that's not who I am. I define myself based upon my aspirations and my dreams. And my Avodah Kasha in life, that I compartmentalize and deal with. But my Kotzer Ruach, my sense of exhaustion and fatigue, with reaching higher, with reaching deeper, with reaching further, Pesach is about breaking free from all of that. And saying, Chayev Adam Liro says, Atzmo, I am free. L'shana habab Yerushalayim. That we can achieve something greater. There is a story told in this past December. I had the opportunity to spend some time with Yosef Mendelovich. I know many of you may be familiar with him. Yosef Mendelovich, who spent over 10 years in a Russian prison. When he was a teenager, he and his friends wanted to escape the Soviet Union and make their way to Israel. So they came up with what in a teenage mind was a foolproof plan. They would hijack a plane, because how hard could that possibly be when you're 16? And they would fly the plane to an area that was near the border and they would push it over the border and before they knew it they'd get arrested, but at least they'd be out. Of course they were caught in the airport, incarcerated, went through the process of this kangaroo court and sentenced to 10 years of hard labor. And Yosef Mendelovich writes of his first Shabbos that he spent in prison. When he walked into this dark and dingy room. This room that had no sense of spirituality, this room that had no Jewish symbols, this room that had no camaraderie, this room that had no opportunity to look higher and dream greater. This room that defined his existence for the next 10 years of his life. Stuck, oppressed, caged. And Yosef Mendelovich looks around and he says to himself, how am I going to be Mekabel Shabbos? And I heard this from him. And he looks around the room and he finds a small little flint or a piece of nail, whatever it was. And he walks over to the walls of the cell. And he digs into the walls of the cell the image of two candles. And he closes his eyes and he makes the bracha asher kidshanu b'mitzvosav etzivanu lehadlik ner shel Shabbos. And he draws a flame on top of these candles. And he begins to dance and sing and recite Kabbalah Shabbos. And he told me how the guards would knock on the door. They thought he had lost his mind. They're outside guarding in this dark and horrible damp prison. He's inside dancing. Chayev Adam Liros is Atzmo ki ilu hu yotzam in Mitzrayim. Yosef Mendelovich understood that if you want to accomplish something in life, you can't be defined by the walls of constraint. You can't be defined by the parameters of oppression. You have to be able to create a reality that transcends your circumstance. You have to be able to look beyond where you are right now. And I think that that is one of the most inspirational aspects of being in yeshiva. And it's one of the dimensions that drew me back. Because I do remember sitting in this room. And I do remember having dreams and aspirations, and some of them I fulfilled and some of them I fell short. But I remember being here because you saw personalities, you got to know Rabbeim, you saw Gedolim. You were exposed to experiences that showed you that there's so much greatness out there. And I remember also being challenged by all of this greatness. And feeling like, but I'm not as smart as them. I'm not as motivated as them. I'm not as experienced as them. Will I really ever be able to measure up or even accomplish things on my own? And that's where the dream has to become part of you. We can't allow ourselves to be defined by what we're not. We allow ourselves to be defined by what we can be. And that's what Pesach's about. And that's the magic of being here. The magic of recognizing that the world has so much that we could accomplish, that we could give, that we could learn, that we could teach, that we could elevate, that we could inspire. And there are so many different dimensions to it. And it's one of the only yeshivas where you really get exposure to that sense of diversity and all those nuances of opportunity. But it all begins with you. It all begins when the call comes. V'hotseisi v'yitzalti v'ga'alti v'lak'achti v'heveisi. When the call comes to not give up on Yerushalayim, when the call comes to make Shabbos in a cell, that we recognize that not Lo Shamu El Moshe, Shamu Moshe, Liros Es Atzmo Ki Hilu Yotza Mimitzrayim, that we could achieve, that we could reach, that we could aspire, that we could dream, and that we can ultimately arrive at a greatness beyond our wildest imagination. Have a wonderful, wonderful Yom Tov.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Glasser. Just want to introduce Rabbi Penner for a moment. We're sitting here in this Beis Medrash right now after a year of what I think has been an amazing, amazing year of growth for BMP. And the vision of this Beis Medrash as being our home and so many other things has been Rabbi Penner's priority. BMP, despite so many other programs and other things that have been going on that have taken time, has always been Rabbi Penner's priority, and we have a lot to be grateful for, and we thank him for trying to move our program to the next level. I think after a year we can say that we've got to the next level. We still got still a lot more work we got to do. But it's been a great year of learning, it's been a great year of Torah growth and personal growth, and being in the Beis Medrash, and being connected to one another, to having Shabbatonim, to having other things, and we really have to thank Rabbi Penner for what's been a wonderful year. We wish him continued Hatzlacha as he goes into year number two. B'chavad Rab, Rabbi Penner.
Thank you, Rav Willig. Thanks for all you're doing for this program. Baruch Hashem, almost the end of this man before Pesach. Rishus the Rabbanim, Rosh Yeshiva. Just want to share with you a quick thought that I share at my Seder to try to make my Seder more meaningful. The rabbi of a shul, which I am in Queens, the rabbi ends up with a very interesting crew for the Seder. Because, let's face it, most people have families to go to, most people have set arrangements, and the rabbi gets the sheris hapleita, the people who, for whatever reason, don't have a place to go, don't have a real Seder to be part of, or perhaps never have been at a Seder before. We've had fascinating Sedarim. People come to the Sedarim with very interesting gifts. A few years ago, a family that had never celebrated a Seder, they called me up and they asked me what they could get. And I said, no, nothing. I was afraid they'd bake. And I said, no, nothing. And he insisted. So I said, just go to the liquor store and ask for a bottle of kosher for Passover wine. That's pretty easy. He brought a closed thing. My wife didn't recognize it. I'm coming in for Orchaz. It's about a $200 bottle of Glenlivet, which is sitting on my kitchen table. Presented interesting halachic questions. Probably a really good bottle of scotch too. This is the crew that comes to the Penner ones. Obviously, a very labor-dick Seder. The crew that comes to us. Any of you want to join us? Please feel free to walk to Hollywood and to crash. So I always say to everybody that they're there for a journey with us, and they're really coming along for a journey with our family. And I tell them that they're really coming for three different Sedarim. I say that we are going to tonight celebrate three different Sedarim together. First of all, we're going to celebrate a Seder that the Jews celebrated before they left Mitzrayim. The last night. That was the first Seder, was the night before we left Mitzrayim. And on some level, that's the Seder we're going to celebrate. We're going to recreate that Seder. We're going to pretend that we're leaving tomorrow. We're not going to do certain things. We're not going to put blood on the doorpost. We're not going to sit with our bags packed. But on some level, we're going to pretend that it's going on around us. When we open the door at midnight to say Shvoch HaMoscha L'Goyim, we're going to kind of feel like Makas Bechoros is going on. It's the night of Pesach. That's Seder number one. Seder number two, I tell them that we're going to celebrate, is a Seder in Yerushalayim. We don't have the Korban Pesach, but we're going to do a lot of things to remember that Korban Pesach and to remember what it was like to have sacrifices, to be in Jerusalem with a little more perspective. And then there's a third Seder, which I tell them we're going to celebrate, and that's the Seder of 2014. Because part of the goal at every one of our Sedarim is to bring the Seder up to date. To make it not just about what happened to our ancestors, but to make it about what happened to ourselves. And I tell them that as great a Seder, even if we had the perfect Seder last year, we're not going to be able to have the same Seder we had last year this year, because a lot's happened during this year. A lot of things have changed. The world has changed. And we need to have a different Seder this year than the one we had last year. And I tell them that as we go through the Seder, I want you to keep all these three Seders in mind. On the one hand, we're waiting to leave. On the other hand, we're sitting in the shadow of the Beis HaMikdash. And on the other hand, we're sitting here in Holliswood, having looked back at our own lives and what happened. Mishnah and Pesachim tells us that we have to talk about the symbols of the Seder. We have to talk about the symbols of the Seder. Rabbi Gamliel tells us that we have to talk about why we have these things. It may be a prat in the mitzvah of telling the story. By the way, the rabbis made a very, very interesting pedagogical, educational device out of the Seder. Whatever it was that we're trying to get out of the Seder, the rabbis thought it was really hard. So they scripted every single moment of the night. Do you ever think about the possibility that the more halacha there is, the more text there is, the more minhag there is at a particular time, the more the rabbis felt they needed to help us get through this or help us get something out of it? Probably the two times when there is the most minhag and halacha that guides us second by second is the week of Shiva and the week of Pesach. And if we see that the rabbis gave us so much direction, so much halacha, it must be that those are very difficult times to celebrate properly. And they didn't want to leave it to chance, because what happens at the Seder is crucial. And they wanted to make sure that we succeeded. So they scripted it. They gave us a text. In fact, they called it what? A Seder. Order. I want you to do every one of these things. And they gave us audio-visual. The Torah gave us audio-visual. This was before the age of bringing something up on a PowerPoint. But how educationally advanced that we can't just tell a story. We have to taste it. We have to feel it. We have to smell it. We're going to use every one of our senses, because whatever it is we're supposed to get out of that night is hard, is complicated. So Rabbi Gamliel tells us you got to use these symbols. You got to use matzah. You got to use maror. And you have to at least pretend you have a Pesach. And you have to explain why we have each one. And we know why. We say it in the Haggadah. I want to focus for a few moments on maror. Because maror is pretty much the easiest. It's there on the table. It's not, the matzah's a little complicated. Is it freedom? Is it slavery? Is it the bread of affliction? Is it the bread of freedom? Maror is very simple, right? We all know why we have maror. Everybody knows we have maror because it tastes bitter-ish. Depends on what you eat. And that's supposed to get us to remember, Vayimaru eschayehem, right? We know that we're supposed to eat the maror because it tastes bitter, and then we're supposed to, I don't know, connect. Connect to the people who were in slavery. Everybody knows this, except for the Or HaChaim HaKadosh. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh, in Perek Yud Bet, when it describes the first Seder, says that the reason why we have maror is because we always have charif in our lafas. That's what he says. He says the reason why we have maror is not via maror. Remember, he says, because everybody knows that roast meat tastes good with charif. The reality is that the Seder foods were so much different than the ones we have now. They had lamb. Good. They had lamb. They had matzah, but the matzah was probably not $26 a pound, and it was also probably not hard. It was probably a softer matzah, as some Sephardim eat today. Doesn't mean we necessarily, Ashkenazim, feel that they know the practice, but Lamaisa, it probably was softer matzah. And it was lettuce or whatever it was, gave a little bit of a sharp taste. We know what that's called, a lafa. You go across the street. They ate not like that, you know, the classic Korech scene, right? Everybody has their plate, and they got the two matzahs, and they got the lettuce and a little charosa sticking out, and you make a beautiful sandwich, you take one bite, the whole thing falls apart. There is no normal way to eat the Korech. Right, what we do in our family, and then the Rabbi Soloveitchik used to do this, we wrap in the lettuce. Just an interesting thing to do. We crumple up the matzah a little bit, and we make cigars out of the lettuce, and it holds together a little bit better that way. Okay, but that's not what they used to eat. They ate a lafa. They had the pizza on the outside, and they had the lamb on the inside, and they had some charif on the inside. It's a normal thing to eat like a normal person. That's what the Or HaChaim says that the maror is. And the question is, didn't the Or HaChaim go to yeshiva? Didn't he have a Maxwell House Haggadah? Didn't he have anything? Everybody knows the reason why we eat maror is not so that it tastes good with the lamb. Maror is an interesting thing, Rabosai. We know that the chiyuv to eat maror today is only derabbanan. The chiyuv to eat maror today is only derabbanan. But it used to be that on the Torah level, we had to eat maror. Why is Mar only the Rabbanan today? Anybody know? Why did the Chiyuv drop down to a Din de Rabbanan? Because we don't have the Korban Pesach. Maror is only biblically required, just follow me for a second, when we have a Korban Pesach. Why should that be? Perhaps the answer is as follows. When we eat Maror today, what we accomplish by eating the Maror is only one of two things. What we eat Maror today, all we do is remember that they were slaves. We remember that it was difficult for them. But when the maror is eaten with the Korban Pesach, it might have another dimension. It might not only be something that we eat because it's bitter, but something which spices the Korban Pesach. What's the pshat? What is it that we're trying to accomplish on a deoraisa level when we eat the maror together with the Pesach? What are we accomplishing? Perhaps the maror, which represents the slavery, when eaten with the Pesach, which represents what? The redemption, the night of the redemption. Perhaps the maror takes on an additional dimension. It's not just that it reminds us of the slavery, but it shows us that in the context, once we got to the end, once we got to the Geula, we can look differently at that maror. Charif, in a sandwich alone, if you just had a lafa and charif, doesn't taste very good. But with the lamb, with the geula, it starts to make sense. Many of the Mefarshim talk about the fact that, of course, the slavery was horrible. It was much more horrible than we can imagine. It wasn't like we learn in nursery school, work, 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 every day and every night. It was terrible. It was a work camp. And yet, when the Jews came out of Egypt, they weren't the same people that they were when they went in. When we got to the Geula, it's so hard when you're in the middle of the whole process. But when they got to the end, they were able to look back at the years that they were slaves and understand it a little bit in context. To have the Maror with the Pesach. Which can also explain, can help us understand why that first night they needed the maror. Well, I have a maror. Why do I have the maror? The maror is there to remember the slavery. The first Seder, Rabosai, was the night before they left Egypt. They have to remember the slavery? They're still in Egypt. They're in their slave clothes. They're in their slave home. They need to eat maror. They can just look around. They have the memories of the family members that have been killed. They're there in a work camp. They need to eat maror the first night before they leave to remember that there were slaves in Egypt? But that night, as they realized the next day they were going to get out, they were able to look back at all of the years and begin to understand, eat the two together in the context of the Pesach. And to be able to look in a different way at the tragedies they had seen. We can't do that today. Today, maror is derabanan. Today, maror is simply a remembrance because we don't live in a time of geula. We don't live with a Korban Pesach. We don't have that symbol today. So today, we just remember that it was terrible. We aren't given that ability to put it into context. But when we have a Pesach, maror is not only, of course, it's always a symbol of the slavery. But when we have it in the context of the Pesach, it might be something much more. It helps us understand how the whole thing comes together. We don't have so many of those moments in our life, Rabosai. We don't have so many of those moments where we go through difficult things, and yet we're able to look back and see the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or even realize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu got us out of it. By the way, those are two different things. One is when I can look back and say, ah, I understand why Hashem did this to me. That's rare. It takes a very special person and a very special circumstance. Another is simply to say, now that it's done, I thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu for getting me out of it. I don't know why I went through this. but I made it to the end. And now I can look back and understand somehow that just as Hashem took me out of it, He was still there with me all of those years. It's very difficult at the difficult times to keep the Ribono Shel Olam in mind. And somehow, when we're taken out of them, we very quickly forget the experience, the questions that we had, the difficulties that we had. One of the things that we have to do at the Pesach Seder is to try to look at some of the difficult things that happen in our own lives and remember that they pass. And remember that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was with us, even though there were times we weren't sure exactly where He was. And to be able to use the Seder experience to put the Maror in our lives, and everybody has it. And if you don't have it yourself, Baruch Hashem, you have two friends who have it. And to be able to somehow put it into perspective, to use the fact that He saved us before, to have faith, to understand that He's still with us today. Yetzias Mitzrayim, says the Ramban, is the fundamental piece of our faith. That's where it cuts, the building block of our faith. We have to use the Seder to help us look at our regular lives, our everyday lives. Somehow, we question HaKadosh Baruch Hu very much when things are difficult. And when things get better, we forget Him right away. When I give Shiur Mantfila, so I very often give the mashal of a person who's driving around. He's got a big interview, Mitzvah Shem soon by you guys, big interview in a firm in Manhattan, and you were dumb enough not to take the train, and you took your own car in, and you're somewhere looking for a spot, somewhere in Midtown. And you're driving around, there's only three spots total possible. I don't know what you were thinking in the first place, but you're driving around, and then you finally start turning to the Ribono Shel Olam. And you say, my whole life is bad. This is it. My whole future. I'm going to be late for this interview. I can't believe I got it. I really need a spot. And you're praying. You're looking around. I really need a spot. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, strangely enough, a car just pulls out right in front of you and says to the Ribono Shel Olam, it's okay, I found a spot. That's what we do. The way we are when we need something, and the way we are when we come out of it, we forget. We don't learn from the experience. We don't realize that He might have been listening to us all along. We don't put the two together. We don't put the Pesach and the Maror together. But we have to at the Seder. One of the things I talk to the rabbi students about a lot is, you've all heard about how hard it is to be a rabbi. I'd love to see from this group a good number of guys at the next Chag HaSmicha. I happen to think it's a wonderful profession for good Jewish boys. That's not what I'm here for today. But everybody says, a shul rabbi, that's so difficult. That's crazy. You got to deal with the balabatim. There's politics. The reality is, there are some. I've heard there are some. I've been a shul rabbi now for 18 years. But the most difficult thing for a shul rabbi is not, I'll tell you the secret, is not the politics, is not the narishkeit. The most difficult thing about being a shul rabbi is going through trauma with people. It's actually loving people and caring about people and going, you know, in your everyday life, something terrible happens. But, you know, hopefully it's every couple of years. But when you're the rabbi of a shul, you're going through this on a weekly basis, something really difficult with people you really care about. And you really get into it. And you come home and you have this on your shoulders. You went through so many things are happening to so many people. And the Talmidim often ask me, I've only been doing this 18 years, but like, does this get easier? Does it get easier after time to go through this with people? And I say yes and no. The one thing that makes it easier is when you're sitting with someone on the floor and they're crying hysterically, you know in the back of your mind that they're going to get through it. because over 18 years you've seen other people on the floor and you didn't think they could get through it, and they did. Be'ezras Hashem, they did get through it. Now you can't say that to a person who's in mourning. And you can't say that to a person in crisis. You can't say, don't worry, it'll be fine in 2 years. Don't worry, in 2 years you'll be back. In a year and a half I'll see you at a kiddush and you'll be smiling. You don't say that, chas v'shalom, to anyone. But you yourself know that. You yourself know that with the help of Hashem, people do get through the worst things. They do get to the other side. And you see people who you thought could never ever smile again, and they're able to do that. That's the Pesach experience. The Pesach experience is to be able to look back at our lives, each one of us, to look through the difficult times that we and other people have gone through, and to realize that even though we didn't think we could ever go on, and we didn't think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was listening, and we didn't think that it would get to a Yeshua, it got to a Yeshua. We got to the other side. It needs to be a powerful shot of faith. Seder night is not a night of eating. You'll excuse me, it's not a night of saying Divrei Torah out of a notebook that you took in 12th grade. It's very nice, the kids have all their things. That's all wonderful as long as you get to the Iker, which is faith, which is understanding that terrible things do happen in this world, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu does see us through them. And we are able to look back on them in a way that we couldn't imagine that we'd be able to look on them. No one who was in slavery in Mitzrayim could ever imagine that they'd be charif in a lafa of redemption. No one could imagine that they could possibly get through. Rabosai, I'm not simplifying. It doesn't explain to us why these things happen. I don't claim to know, and please don't believe anyone who says they do. We don't know why we go through all these difficult things. But Pesach, the Seder, gives us the koach to recognize that just as we've been through other things, we will get through. And just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't forget us in Mitzrayim, He hasn't, chas v'shalom, forgotten us in our own lives with our own struggles. It's Chag Ha'aviv. I just spent this Shabbos in Los Angeles. This is one of Goldberg's Machatanim. And I was trying to explain to them in Los Angeles what winter was like in New York this year. See, they always think winter, why would anyone live in New York, which is a shaila, but they're wondering why anybody would live in New York anyway. But certainly, they think every winter in New York is just one of those, just a horror film that just plays again and again, and why would anyone not live in Los Angeles? I could probably explain why anyone would live in Los Angeles. That's a separate show. Both have shailas. Both sides of the country have shailas. But I tried to explain to them this winter in particular and how depressing it was. My next door neighbor, who's a psychiatrist, had such a booming business in January. It was mamish, but you know what I'm talking about? It was mamish depressing. It was depressing. You thought it would never end. Pesach is Chag Ha'aviv. Pesach is Chag Ha'aviv. You know why it's Chag Ha'aviv? Because that's the power of Pesach. That things that we thought would never end, darkness, gloom, death of the physical world that we thought would never end, it blooms again. It comes back alive. And we recognize that even though we as a people and we as individuals in 2014 at our Seder may go through terrible winters, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings us the spring. He brings us the Pesach. And as we sit in Amir Tzashem, even those who Nebuch have to stay home in New York and not in a really hot place, but even those who are home, as I would never have it any other way, in my own living room with my own family, Baruch Hashem, even those who are here starting to feel it outside, there's a feeling that something has been lifted. We dare not forget that it's lifted by the Ribono Shel Olam. We dare not forget that those winters in our lives always come to an end. And we have to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We have to learn from Pesach. We have to increase our emunah. And we have to make the Seder relevant to each and every one of us. Chag Kasher V'Sameach.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Penner. Everyone should have a wonderful Pesach. We'll see each other tomorrow on Thursday, Meretz Hashem.